Please note, this podcast does not provide medical advice. The information, images, and other materials contained are for informational purposes only. No information discussed is a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please seek help from your physician for medical questions or advice. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Brain Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Turos. I'm your brain coach. And my goal is to create a community of educators, therapists, clinicians, family members, researchers, and any other person who supports a healthy brain. Thanks for joining us today, and let's get started. Today, we welcome Lou Goldstein, educational in everything from elementary to college. So he considers himself a K through 16 expert. And I just want to say thank you for joining us today, Lou. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So just want to dive right in. I know we have a little bit of an intro of your profession and your title, but how would you define your profession? And can you tell us a little bit about how you got into it?
As you said earlier, I've been in education since the late 70s, and I really wasn't going to go into education. I was a journalist writing about a whole lot of subjects and found myself covering a story that had with, you know, educational trends back in the 70s, and found it very interesting and thought I'd go back to my former high school and become a substitute teacher to learn more about it. And when I got back just to being a substitute teacher, I caught the bug of teaching and being in education. And it was very exciting to me. You know, even though I was in education going for my master's at the time, I was writing, I was substitute teaching, and then I became a labor negotiator, learned a lot about education, and got a job in higher education down at the state level under then Governor Tom Kaine. I was running the Department of Higher Education, the Employee Relations Office, and doing negotiations with the governor's office. And so it was all about educational interests. And then I moved to Montclair State University for about 6 years, came back to government for 8 to run the County of Mercer, their personnel and special projects office. And then an opening occurred in Princeton. And I said, what? It's about time to go back to education. So I served as the assistant superintendent there for 19 years, retiring about 2.5 years ago. You know, education has been a common theme for me, whether it be in elementary, middle, or high school, or higher education, and I've always really enjoyed it.
Wow. So it's incredible, because your path was not straightforward. And what I'm seeing when I'm talking with so many people that have been in education or research or, you know, scientific discovery, nobody really thought that far ahead. Nobody came at it from a very, I'm going to do this in this order. We've all kind of wound our path around different routes. And that's what I found fascinating. And you have such a wide range of experiences that, you know, whoever you're working with and for, they're very, very lucky to have such a wide breadth of experience from you. So that's amazing. So from journalism to higher ed to high school, it's just incredible. I mean, you've seen it all. So what kind of trends and research are you seeing in what you're doing these days?
Well, I know last year and this year, it's going to go down in history as, you know, with the pandemic, which paralyzed the world. And of course, it also, you know, paralyzed education as we know it. But, you know, there's a couple trends that are coming out this year and has a lot to do with the virtual learning that we went through last year and the in-class teaching, hopefully that will continue throughout this year and next. I think one of the first trends, personalized teaching, whether in higher education or in K-12 education, is also another trend that has to do with social learning. Working with teachers in education and higher education, there are many teachers who have opted for social media in education as a communication tool so that students can interact with each other by sharing study materials, debating with others in a group, or easily commenting on someone else's work. There's one thing we can't overlook, obviously, is we're all technological beings, but we're all social ones too. And that leads me into another trend, which is mobile learning. And mobile phones are part of our day-to-day life. We can almost say they seem to be part of our extensions of our bodies. Since it seems like we can go scarcely anywhere without them. There's numerous apps that have emerged that allow us to learn languages, mathematics, science, from anywhere and at any time. And it really is a support tool. Video games are also coming in as a trend that's going to be the future. You know, students playing games, learning from games. Another trend is videos, the continued use of videos. It's a very effective tool and students learn very well from it. We also have to look at other things that involve all students, especially special needs students. Early detection is critical, especially when you're looking at students who may need special attention from the earliest age. It's kind of like looking at it, cancer. Cancer has four stages, right? You want to detect mm-hmm. things at stage one of cancer and not at stage four. So stage one in education from K to three, stage two would be grades 4 and 5. Stage three would be the middle school and then high school. You don't want to left unneed any students' needs until high school before detecting right. it. So the earlier you get to the issue, the better off it is. And we have more tools right now that are helping special education teachers detect and put students on IEPs and get students off IEPs, you know, as they progress through their journey, their educational journey in schools. So I think, you know, with technology can be very, very useful and very helpful. And in the way we learn, in the way students learn, and the way teachers can support their classroom.
And I think the key word there is support. And I think the pandemic has definitely given us an incredible opportunity to kind of upend and get rid of some of the things that weren't working and implement some of the things that could be even better. So it is exciting. And I totally agree with you in the fact with, you know, breaking it down into those four areas so that people can detect if something just isn't working with the way they're learning anymore. So those are key pieces. And a lot of times when kids get to the upper school, as you know, they have a late diagnosis through no fault of anybody other than nobody picked up on it early enough. But if we had these key times in place where we could take another look at things, I bet we could really make things a little bit easier for our learners moving forward. And that, because I see that too. I see that with kids who've, you know, maybe gone to 11th grade and then they suddenly realize they have dyslexia or, you know, some kind of executive function vulnerability. And it's not to say that it's harder to quote unquote fix, because right. nobody needs to be fixed, but it does make it easier when you have fewer things going on in your life to kind of mitigate some of the learning challenges that kids develop later on. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think it also puts a lot of pressure on teachers and child study teams to diagnose these things at the earliest stage possible, because K-3 is really the building blocks of education, right?
Right.
You want to get every student reading and writing and, you know, informed and communicating well in those first couple of years.
Right.
And that includes catching anything that needs to be caught. And right. so that it can be strengthened through the next couple of years. So yeah, it's something that, you know, parents need to work with teachers on and give their input as to what the student is doing at home too. So that gives a better idea for teachers to really get a full picture of the student.
Exactly. And that's part of why I want to do this podcast so much, is to kind of break down some of these ideas, the stigma of, you know, I truly believe everybody should know how their brains work. And I think it would actually alleviate a lot of tension between the home and the school and with regards to getting a diagnosis, if at those pivotal times, you just kind of looked and saw what was going on. So I'm with you on that. I think the more we can talk about it, the more we understand, the more we have a dialogue between home and school and the health professionals, the easier it becomes for all of us, because we are all pulling in the same direction, for sure. So thank you for that. I mean, that's a lot of information and it's a lot to think about. And I think sometimes when we're still in a pandemic, for those of you listening sometime in the future, but right now we're still in the middle of a pandemic. So we're trying to figure out where technology and all of these great trends can really help us. So Lou, what would you say with all of these good things happening, what would you say is the hardest part of your job?
The hardest part of my job? I don't look at it as hard. Okay. I also don't look at having bad days. I think just some days are better than others. So there are no bad days to me when you're in education. I think the hardest part of my job is convincing parents that things aren't as bad as they think they are, and mm-hmm. convincing students that they need to work a little harder on their weaknesses so that they eventually, you know, minimize them and, you know, later in life, it doesn't affect them. So I think it's more so convincing people that things are going to be okay. And mm-hmm. it's not the end of the world. Education is all about positivity and addressing needs rather than criticism, which we see a lot about the criticism that education gets. But some of it's warranted, but many of it is not warranted. And I think if anybody, I'll tell you a funny story. I had an individual who wanted to be a teacher, and he thought after he retired that, you know, it would be a nice retirement job. So he came in and we hired him to teach history. And after 6 days, he came into my office and said, "Lou, I can't do it anymore. This is way too hard." I said, "What do you mean? You always wanted to do this. You said it was going to be a nice, easy, you know, cheap retirement job." He said, "Lou," he goes, "between the preparation, the grading, the delivery, the instructions, the test, the this, the that," he said, "this is overwhelming. I never realized just how much work teachers put in, not just in 10 months, which is a school year, but year round, because every teacher works year round, yep. whether it's wrapping up a school year or preparing for the next year or working with students during the summer." So I think people get misnomered by the fact that education is a full-time year-round job, which yeah. does not have any, you know, at Christmas time, no one gets any bonuses in education. You know, right. The bonus you get is students improving. That's the bonus you get, the intrinsic.
Right. Right. And I remember when my first year of teaching, I didn't realize in Maryland, we have a 10-month system. And I did not realize I did not get paid during the summer. So even though I was working, and like you said, it's nonstop. I mean, the clock may end officially on a school day at 3 or 3:30, but you know as well as I do, I remember nights where I was still doing things until 8 or 9 o'clock that night to get my lessons in order for the next day. And I agree. I think people just do not realize how much time our teachers put in. So again, that's a whole nother podcast for us. So,
love of education.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you reframed it, that it's not hard, that, you know, there are good days and bad days, because that is so true. And, you know, honestly, that's true for everything we do. If we could just learn to reframe it, and learn to grow from it, I think a lot of the stress and anxiety could dissipate. So what advice would you have for those families who are really struggling through all of this?
Well, first of all, you never give up, right? And I would basically say, you always want to communicate whatever your struggles are with, you know, teachers or administrators or, you know, the appropriate people, and also get help, you know? So whether, you know, a lot of times parents feel they're struggling, you know, talk to other parents. Don't rush to criticize things, you know, find a way to, you know, because that criticism filters down to the student, and the student feels frustrated because he or she may not be able to fulfill their parents' perceived desires. So I think it's important for all parents to work with the school system as co-equals in the education of their child. And when they feel frustrated, you know, write an email. Don't verbalize it, you know, and then sit down and say, "Look, here's what I'm thinking, and what are you thinking?" And, you know, take that time to have that sit down with a teacher or high school principal or elementary principal, and find ways to be to creatively construct a right. positive educational vision for your student.
Right. So think before you speak. You know, think it through.
Yeah, think it through, but also don't jump up and you know, judge right away.
Right. Yeah. Because then that puts everybody on the defensive, right? So, yeah. Well, great. So do you have a couple more minutes for what I call the lightning round questions?
Go ahead.
Great. All right. You ready?
Sure.
All right. Here we go. So do you have some sort of mantra or vision statement? And if you do, could you share it with us?
Sure. If it was easy, everyone would do it, right? So teaching is not easy. And everyone doesn't do it. And you never know when you're making a memory. So it's always been is teaching students to lead lives of joy and purpose.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, and I'm capturing all these in my journal from everybody that I talk with. I love these. These are so inspiring. Okay, what's your most audacious failure? Like, do you have a personal failure?
Do we have to narrow it down to one?
You don't. We could go on and on. I got time.
We've had so many failures. I mean, in education, unless you're free to risk, then you're free to fail. If you're not free to risk, then you'll be afraid to fail. So I think right now I've had so many failures, which I've looked at over the years that I've tried different things that didn't work. And then I thought back and said, well, why didn't it work? And then I realized what needed to be tweaked, and then it worked. So without risking things, you're not going to succeed. You got to fail before.
Just a data point.
I'll give you an example, because a lot of people say that sounds like, you know, just your standard speech. I was looking to implement a Generation One program. That is a program for students who have never, you know, whose families have never been to the first generation, you know, to go to college. And, you know, I pitched it and everybody said, yeah, it's a great idea, but, you know, you really haven't figured it out. And so it went by the wayside for that year, and I felt bad about that. Then I thought about, you know, why? And then I realized that I needed to get the community involved. I needed to get parents' support. I needed to get teacher support. And once that was built, then the next year, it was a different pitch. And as it turned out, every year since then, approximately, you know, 40 students who were coming from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and some from just first-time college backgrounds, were admitted into a program where they all got into college. Instead of the previous expectation was they would finish high school, get a job, get married, have kids, and the cycle would just continue. Mm. Here you're breaking the cycle and saying, okay, you're going to college and you're gonna, you know, pursue a career, et cetera, and it's gonna lead to a whole different type of life for you. And we took those students, and there was a 98% graduation of all those students over the years, which is amazing. But we took those students and brought them back as mentors to our kindergarten and first grade students, because they wanted to be just like the person they saw from their community who got out and made something for themselves. And it was very powerful. And it's very lasting. And the program now is going into its, I guess, 16th year now.
Wow. So
it made a difference for people's lives. It changed things for the better.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm going to have to check out that program. That's wonderful.
Yeah, Generation One. It's in the Princeton school system. Yeah.
Great. So what motivates you on days where you feel overwhelmed? How do you get over the stickiness?
I talk to students. Even when there's so much work to be done, one way for me to realize why I'm here for the students, and that's my job, to give them and their parents and the teaching and support staff the best tools so that they all can be successful. So I go into the schools and I talk with students, and we just have conversations, and it reaffirms, you know, what I need to do. And it reaffirms and values their input, and it makes them feel like they're visible to everybody in what they just consider the building over there where the administration is, you know, the evil empire. You know? You know, it's like the teachers are all the, you know, the light side, and, you know, administration's the dark side. But then they realize we're people too, and we actually go shopping, go to movies and stuff like that. So then they're happier to make that connection. And whenever you can make connections with as many people or as many students or as many teachers as possible, you're way better off, because then they get to know you. You feel better about yourself. You feel like you're valued.
Yeah, and you feel like you're part of a community.
That's what I do. I walk around the schools, I talk to people, and whether they want to hear from me or not, they go, oh, it's Lou again. Oh my gosh, no. It's going to be a conversation. Oh my gosh, I don't have time. Then they find out they didn't not have time to have the conversation because you know what? It saves a lot of emails too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That I love it. I wish I had a Lou when I was in school. So what suggestions would you have for people who might be interested in doing what you're doing now? I mean, I want to do what you're doing now. You're motivating me, but what would you say to people who want to get into the field that you're in?
We need teachers more now than ever. We have a lot of teachers who are not coming into education for the wrong reasons. And it's all about doing what you love. And if you do what you love, every day is easier. And it's just amazing. And so I would encourage anyone who wants to get into education to basically find a mentor. You know, talk to them about their experiences, whether it be a teacher or administrator. You know, introduce yourself and find a way to, you know, tap them for their knowledge and their experience, and, you know, continue on that route through college and try different things. Don't be solely, I'm just going to be an elementary school teacher. Well, that's great. But if you do different real life experiences, when you become a teacher, it makes the curriculum that you're teaching much more enriching, much more valuable, and you want to be able to broaden the curriculum whenever you're a teacher. So I would say, you know what, just do different things. I mean, I never thought I'd get into, you know, education the way I did. I started out as a journalist. I was going to, you know, basically undercover all these, you know, uncover all these, you know, wrongs and write about them. And found out that what I really love to do was work with people, work with students, teach students, and be in education. And so it's been a very rewarding career for me. I didn't expect that it would be that career, but it turned into that career. So sometimes it's not, as you said, not always a straight line. Sometimes it's a little zigging and zagging, but you do the thing that you love and you do it the best you can. And you'll find out that at the end of the day, you'll be good.
You just have such a passion for what you do. And I really wish I could extract whatever it is that's in your DNA and inject it into more people in the world. I really do. What do you think that is?
It's a good question. When I reflect upon it, I think that it's because from earliest age, there was a lot of people who thought that I didn't really have much of a future in that. My parents were great. They were very, very helpful, and they were big supporters. But there's a lot of people who thought that I would never be successful for a variety of reasons. And I wasn't the best student. I was a very good athlete. And I think that if I wasn't a good athlete, I just would have, you know, went through the system unnoticed. But I had a desire, I guess, to prove people wrong. And that carried me a long way. And whether it was working three jobs in college to make sure I got through college, or just anything I wrote or anything I did, in the back of my mind, I always wanted to prove people wrong. And so it's just, I guess, that motivating thing to me. I had a great resilience. I was very lucky to be resilient. And I think, you know, being resilient carries a lot of weight. I mean, I talk to students who freak out if they go from A to an A minus. And I have students that get C's and they're like, yeah, that's great. I'm okay, you know? And they are okay because during their life, they're going to be okay because they have resilience. And, you know, I was basically a B student, maybe a C plus student, you know, but to me it was all about, I enjoyed school. Okay. But I also enjoyed people and enjoyed doing things and learning new things. So if I got a D on an economics test in college, it didn't faze me because I knew I could get a C or B and A if I really put my mind to it. And sometimes I didn't, but you know, I just felt that it was really important for me to, succeed and do the best I can. And even though I failed at certain things, I always, you know, kept going to say, you know what, the person who told me that I would not be successful in life was always the person that motivated me. And you know, so I guess that's why I do, which I didn't mention before, I have two film festivals that I do, the Nassau Film Festival and the Cranford Film Festival. I host two TV shows, one in Cranford on Health Watch and one in Princeton called Focus That's why the film festival, Nassau Film Festival, is now one of the top 40 comprehensive short film festivals in the world. Oh, so I always like to put out quality products and do quality things as much as I can. And I know that even though I'm retired, I'm always going to be pushing myself to do more things. And frankly, it drives everybody else crazy because they think I should just be hanging out as I do every Wednesday, watching my grandchildren. But they think, you know, come on, Dad, just slow it down a little bit. And I have no need. In fact, I'm slowing it up. All goes back to that initial base of motivating me and having resilience in life.
And you found that harmony. So it's not balance. Because some days you're sloth, some days you're working crazy hours, but you have found that balance that makes you happy and motivates you. And that's what we all want.
I was a special needs student in school. I couldn't say my L's. I mean, I could not speak correctly. I could not basically function very well early in as a student. But I said, you know what? I'm just going to do the best I can. And over time, I exceeded my expectations because I wanted to show that I could be a regular student just like everybody else. So people put labels on me, but labels are misleading. They're just labels so that basically educators can help you. It's not negative labels, it's labels to help. So if your student has a label, don't worry about it. It's just something that they need to focus on more than another student. But you got to remember that every student has a talent and every student has a gift. And it's our job as educators to extract those talents and gifts and do the very best we can.
So I could talk with you seriously all day long about this stuff. You fired me up. So thank you. But how can people find you? Where are you these days?
They can't find me.
You're incognito.
I really don't exist. Now, if they really want it, they can email me anytime. It's Goldstein, Goldstein, lew@gmail.com with any questions they may have. And I will always get back to anybody who writes to me. I've worked with school districts and higher education, college and universities, helping them, giving them recommendations on how to save money, whether it's in the health benefits or personnel area, negotiating labor contracts, improving their social media and marketing. Developing appropriate curriculum, you know, analyzing the school district or the college for areas of improvement. And more importantly, I help parents and students analyze. I don't tutor, but I help to analyze a student's strengths, a student's weaknesses, and areas that they can focus on during their educational journey so that they are getting an outside opinion. I'm about as cheap as they come. You know, if you can make a good apple pie.
Well, thank you. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. And it's a lot of good information. I can't wait to listen to this again myself.
Oh, thanks, Mary. I just appreciate the fact being on and wish you and your family, a very, very healthy 21-22 school year.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you so much.
For more information, you can find us on Twitter or Facebook at BrainCogCoach or visit our website at BrainCogCoach.com. I'll see you next time and make it a great day.